Welcome to Discover You, an inspiring podcast exploring cutting-edge solutions to our everyday psychological challenges. We explore complex mental health issues and talk to professionals, experts, and renowned authorities at the forefront of transformative healing. Our mission is to educate and destigmatize, and to ultimately view mental health as a proactive quest for optimized living and equilibrium, rather than mere crisis intervention. Welcome to another episode of Discover You, our podcast exploring innovative and effective solutions to issues in mental and behavioral health. I'm J.D. Collmanson, CEO of Montier Behavioral Health, a family of dynamic and comprehensive mental health treatment centers in Southern California. I'm honored and excited to introduce you to our wonderful guest today, Sarah Gallup. Sarah is a licensed marriage and family therapist and a registered art therapist. She received her master's in marital and family therapy with an emphasis in art therapy from Loyola Marymount University. She currently has a private practice in Los Angeles called Creative Space Art Therapy. Sarah uses a strength-based approach to work with both children and adults, addressing barriers and encouraging growth. She specializes in anxiety, depression, addiction, and relationship issues, and works within various theoretical orientations, including psychodynamic theory, cognitive behavioral therapy, and narrative theory. She truly believes in the power of art to uncover truths and to help clients make the changes they'd like to see in themselves. Welcome, Sarah. So happy to have you with us today. And thank you for taking the time to talk with us about art therapy and your clinical work.
Thank you, JD. I'm honored to be here. Thank you for having me.
To start off with, I would love to hear a little bit about the origins and the history of the field of art therapy.
So the interesting thing about art therapy is it's really been around forever. If you think about petroglyphs, if you think about cavemen, if you think about the universal language of art in terms of different cultures and religions, and the way they used symbols to communicate, and it was part of their sacred practice. So when we're looking at the history of art therapy as it exists today, I like to talk about people as pioneers of art therapy. They really brought it to life. So there was a man named Adrian Hall who coined the term art therapy as he kind of painted his way through healing from tuberculosis. The two pioneers that we as art therapists really refer to most often, one is named Edith Kramer and the other one is Margaret Nomberg. And they started working with art together with clients in the way that we recognize art therapy today.
Around when was that?
That was in the 1940s.
Mm-hmm. And the first fellow, Adrian Hall, who used it with tuberculosis. So that is fascinating because that's using this as a therapeutic intervention for a medical condition.
Mm-hmm. Yes. art therapy is frequently used in children's hospitals with cancer patients. It can help you to really work through difficult, layered, nuanced feelings around physical health problems.
So would you say that it's helpful and it's effective for some of the ancillary behavioral health, psychological challenges that surround medical? Or would you say that it is actually helpful at a physiological medical level?
That's a great question. And I would say both.
Wow.
Because art is inherently self-regulating. So if you're experiencing any kind of pain, any kind of chronic pain, it can really tone down your nervous system. It can kind of separate mind from body a little bit if you get totally absorbed in the art. In addition, if you're working one-on-one with an art therapist, it's a way to really explore what's going on for you in terms of these difficult feelings that you may be having.
Wow. So since the 1940s, has it evolved tremendously until we're the stage where, where it currently is in terms of how it's practiced?
Yeah, it has gone through a lot of evolution. Even probably 20 years ago, art therapy was in its infancy as far as working one-on-one with people. Mm-hmm. It was more about maybe analyzing the art or trying to interpret it. So there was a theory that if you put the sun in the drawing, that meant your father, or if there was a hole in the tree, that meant trauma. And we've evolved since this sort of analyzation of clients' art to the point where we believe that the client knows what's best for them on the inside. And so working with them one-on-one in an art therapy session is more about understanding what the art means to them, helping them to interpret the symbols and the metaphors that came from within.
That's fascinating. And I want to really get to that a little bit later in our time together. Before we jump knee deep into this amazing topic, can you share with us what the actual art session, art therapeutic session might look like, and how would it differ from an art class?
Yeah. So an art class is usually run by a teacher, and the focus is on the product, not the process, as well as there's a certain way to do it. There's a certain way to make this sculpture. This is a technique used for painting. This is what you do with the charcoal. An art therapy session is confidential. So I treat their artwork as I would a clinical file. I don't show it to anybody else, and I let them know that so they feel safe creating. It's about, like any other therapy, it's about the relationship. So it's about the relationship between me and the client and building rapport to the point where they feel safe sharing through art. It's not about making pretty pictures. In fact, sometimes the pictures are pretty intense and powerful and not pretty at all. It's not about being good at art. It's not about the product. It's about engaging in the process and understanding the way it's making your body feel, understanding its impact on your emotions, and being able to reflect upon it when you're finished and looking for metaphors and looking for latent content within that art.
That's amazing. This is about a process. Exactly. I love that line. It's about a process. It's not about the product.
Yes. Yeah. At its core. And it's not about other people looking at it, especially for my clients who are people pleasers. It's about making it just for themselves. No one else is going to judge it. No one else is going to have a comment about it. No one else is going to criticize it. It's just yours, and it's safe and protected.
Maybe you could just give us the Sarah version of art therapy. We'd love to hear in your own words what art therapy is, what it does, who it's most relevant for, and who it can help, you know, whether it's best practiced and done in a group setting or an individual setting. So what would be the description?
And I've worked in art therapy both in groups and one-on-one. When we're going through the program at Loyola, we learn the benefits of both. I was working at a treatment center running groups, and it was so powerful. Working with adolescents, it bypasses defenses. Adolescents are traditionally kind of bottled up and not wanting to share their deepest fears, their deepest hopes, their deepest desires. For example, I might say to them, if you were an animal, who would you be, if they're not wanting to talk about themselves? And I'll put out clay, and some of them might make, you know, they don't know what they're going to make. They start playing with the clay a little bit. It becomes a felt expression of what they're trying to say. And one of them might make a turtle. And so where she might not say outright, especially in a group, I'm struggling with social anxiety, I'm shy, I'm scared. But when she's talking about this turtle, which serves as a metaphor for herself, she can talk about why it feels safer to be in her shell, why it's so difficult to pop her head out of the shell and interact with other animals on the table. So it's particularly useful with adolescents in bypassing their defenses.
Interesting. So it's really harping on a lot of the subconscious observations that we are not necessarily accessing and in tune with for various reasons, whether it's a defense mechanism or the fear of being vulnerable or the amygdala, you know, being activated. So we tend to live in denial or to ignore those aspects of ourselves. And in this safe space, non-threatening sort of environment of creating art, that ends up coming out. And all of a sudden we look at it and we say, wow, here is something that I never knew about myself.
So I'm so glad you brought up the idea of safe space, because that is one of the huge benefits of art therapy. When I'm working one-on-one with a client, they've just met me. They don't know me. They don't necessarily trust me. But they can, the art serves as almost like a third person in the room, and they can trust the art. And so they're able to communicate clearly with the art, and feel safe, because they know it's not me telling them what to do, who they are. It's me walking side by side with them, helping them to interpret what they put on the paper. And sometimes with art, there can be very deep and powerful content. So we as art therapists know not to, if we see something concerning, we know not to push it until the client is ready, especially with trauma.
Right.
Yeah.
And does it help uncover memories that they might not consciously have access to?
Definitely. There's something called latent content, and that is the content that comes through after you've made a piece of art that you weren't even aware that you were putting on the paper. And that can be very powerful in helping us understand our subconscious desires, our subconscious needs, what's going on below the surface.
It's amazing. So to me, it's obvious that we all have an inner rich world that exists at the subconscious level. So we can all be helped by art therapy. My question is that, being that the agent of this particular form of therapeutic healing comes in the guise of artistic creation, does art therapy have more efficacy with those who are more artistically inclined by nature, have more talent with art, have more passion with art? Are they more of a qualified candidate for this, or would you say that its effect can be universal and it can help in the same regard, regardless of your pre-existing talent and interest in art in general?
Ironically, sometimes the trained artists are a little harder to work with in art therapy, because they've been taught rules of form and ways to create, and it can be a little less, what's the word? It's spontaneous. They overthink it. So we really have to work with, when I'm working with an artist, sometimes I only give them like 20 seconds to make something so that they don't overthink it and put too much thought into form and line and content.
That makes so much sense to me. It's like, I'm thinking about it, you know, some folks who are these inspirational speakers, motivational speakers, and it's probably the hardest for them to get motivated by those speeches because they do it professionally. So I guess in a similar light, it's like, if you do this professionally, so it's not necessarily going to have that organic sort of subconscious self-expression. You're so trained, wired to do it.
That's a great parallel. Yeah.
Are you able to use it on yourself as a way to check in?
Yes, I keep an art journal, and I use it for everything from, if I'm having a client I'm trying to understand a little better, I might simply draw their portrait, and that might help me to understand them on a deeper level. I'll see things that I hadn't thought about verbally. If I'm trying to understand a layered, nuanced feeling I'm having, I'll kind of draw it out. And so it works on me just like it works on everyone else. It's self-soothing at the same time that it's giving me information and putting me back in touch with who I really am.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. So my next question is, if the metaphors are enabling me to tap into a deeper insight about myself, creating enhanced self-awareness, in a dramatic way that I might not have ever realized, that would be very effective as what I would imagine to be the first phase of healing
of self-actualization, which is having an unbiased, unadulterated self-perception and allowing one to tap into previous experiences and to be able to create a sense of crystal clarity on their life story. But as far as phase two, which is what the actual healing looks like, is that something that you would have to then turn to other modalities of treatment, whether trauma-based or psychodynamic, but to look for the other interventions now that I'm aware of what's going on underneath the issues, the challenges, the memories, the traumas, my fears, my insecurities. Now that I'm aware of this problem, do I need to turn to another modality, or is there something in art therapy that would actually provide healing in and of itself in addition to the awareness of the challenge and the problem?
So the wonderful and amazing thing about art therapy is it works side by side with all the modalities. So I can use it with a CBT lens, and that might mean telling a client to simply show me what your thoughts look like and show me what your feelings look like and show me what your behavior looks like in order to help them understand the very basis of CBT, which is the cognitive triangle. I can use it narratively. So I might have them, we want to retell their story. We want a different outcome. So I might show them how to make a book and bookbinding and tie it up with string and have them tell their new story in book form. So that works really well with trauma and telling the new story with trauma. We might just continue to use it psychodynamically. So if we're in session and someone's talking about how they keep sabotaging themselves or something along those lines, I might have them draw out what that feels like. And then what comes up on the paper is not only deeper insight, it's also a springboard for conversation. So if they're not able to say why they feel like they sabotage themselves by eating too much or drinking too much or whatever the situation is, they might just have a block, like they don't understand more about that. By putting it down on paper, it forces them to think using the visual part of their brain, which accesses different parts of the brain. So different parts are lighting up, giving us more material to communicate and work with.
That's so amazing. Tell me if this would be accurate based on what you just described. It almost sounds like art is this bridge that allows us to access the subconscious. And so when art therapy becomes this sort of bridge and medium to, in a non-invasive, non-threatening, non-intimidating manner, allow the subconscious to open itself up to the messages, to the content that we're engaging with at the conscious level, then all this work has an exponentially greater chance of being felt and being absorbed and inculcated in our subconscious. So whether that's with CBT, whether that's with trauma, or whether that's with narrative therapy, you're just really allowing an extra seat at the table for the subconscious to be present and partake in this beautiful healing experience.
Yeah, very well said. I love the idea of an extra seat at the table. It's another way to get a little bit deeper into the subconscious. And also, there's a tangible record of change. So a lot of times in therapy, in traditional talk therapy, people will talk about things, and then 1 week later, they may have forgotten what they talked about if they don't take notes, or it may not have really gone very deep.
Right.
When we make art, we can go back and look at the prior week. And also, I sometimes will refer to a certain art piece that a client has made throughout session, if it's relevant to our work together. And so bringing back that visual brings back all the feelings that were associated with it.
Yeah, because there's an amazing correlation. I don't know the science behind it, between the visual and emotional memory. All of us would love to have emotional memory with certain experiences. Imagine everyone who has struggles with chemical dependency or other negative, bad behavioral patterns would be able to have absolute emotional memory of the regret, of the emptiness, of all the negative ramifications of that behavior, of that experience, it would prevent us from re-engaging in it, right? But mm-hmm. we don't have emotional memory. Sometimes a visual like can really bring you back there, not just intellectually, but you know, emotionally and experientially.
Exactly. I've done drawings as simple as, and if there aren't any art materials available, I can just use pen and paper, pencil and paper. But a drawing that I've used in an art directive that I've used in addiction is as simple as show me what it looks like when you're sober and show me what it looks like when you're high, drunk, or whatever. And what comes out on the paper is astounding because they know their life is better when they're sober. They can,
right.
They're tired of other people telling them why it's better. They know on the inside. So when they come up with on their drawing is their idea. It's not someone else telling them to be sober. It's not a family member saying your life would be better sober. This is what you're like when you're drunk. It's their own internal ideas about it on the paper in front of them in a visual form.
Yes, and there's no question that the visual has so much greater influence and power than over the auditory, you know, intervention.
When you asked me, does it work better for some people than others?
Yes.
The one thing we have noticed is for visual people, visual learners, it does work better.
That's right. That would make sense.
And also kinesthetic learners, because they're working. Sometimes I have them put their trauma out on paper, rip it up, mm-hmm. and turn it over and make a beautiful art piece out of it. And so that's when the kinesthetic somatic movement can help heal.
Yes. It almost sounds like, you know, what they do at some of the recovery centers with tearing up the trauma letters and putting it into the fire. It's a very, you know, cleansing and sort of, deep emotional experience of releasing and letting that go. Is this something that is recognized by the APA, the American Psychological Association? Is it considered evidence-based? Are parts of it more evidence-based than others? How would you describe its sort of its standing in the midst of the backdrop of all other, behavioral health modalities of treatment?
Yeah, it is, like you said, more experiential therapy. It's not considered evidence-based just because it's so hard to quantify the research on healing for art therapy. Mm-hmm. There's a journal that comes out, I believe it's bi-monthly, and there is always quantitative and qualitative research going on, but it's really hard to codify in numbers, how art therapy helps. However, it is recognized as, I don't know what the adjective would be. It's recognized as a legitimate therapy by the APA. We have our own governing board, which is the ATCB. That's the Art Therapy Credentialing Board. Hmm. And you can go onto that site to make sure an art therapist has the letters ATR behind their name, which means registered art therapist, and BC, which means board certified art mm-hmm. therapist.
That's very helpful to know, because I think that there are so many people who are artistically inclined and go through certain experiences in helping others, and they call it art therapy, but they might not necessarily have that credentialed and mm-hmm. that basis of a curriculum of content that has been certified.
Right. Yes. And so we don't own the patent on art as art therapists. So we never say to a therapist, you can't use art if you're working with a client in therapy. However, it's not considered art therapy. So in order to be an art therapist, you have to have a graduate program. And as we were saying before, 1,000 hours of supervised treatment before you become registered. And then you take a test to become board certified.
That's interesting, and that's very helpful. I want to ask you a question that's been on my mind, because it's something that you referenced earlier in our discussion, that the art therapist is not there to interpret the art for the client. Their role is to simply be a guide or be there as a witness and not necessarily jumping to offer analysis of the client's creative output.
Exactly.
What I'm struggling with this is when a client's coming and they have some type of a distorted thought process, negative bias, mm-hmm. and that's why they need cognitive behavioral therapy, right? So their thought patterns and their perception is somewhat clouded and obscured. Mm-hmm. How can they accurately excavate what their unconscious patterns are telling them without an intervention of the therapist's analytical lens, which would lend a certain amount of objectivity to the interpretation?
A lot of times art is used in the initial stages as assessment. So we're able to see, for example, if a client is always making really small drawings, not taking up the page, to me, that indicates depression. Clients who come in who are depressed rarely fill the page with bright color. Mm-hmm. But I'm not going to tell that client they're depressed. I'm going to keep that in my head and work with that and ask them more questions, stay curious, ask them, you know, what it's like going through their day. Do they have moments of joy in their day? And then I might reference the artwork again and say, can you add any, what do you notice about your art? Does this, say they drew a stick figure of themselves in a house or something. I would say, how does this image make you feel? And so their answers are going to be the springboard for conversation for me to help them with their depression and then apply interventions for that depression once it's out in the talk space, for lack of a better word. Mm-hmm. And so if I were to say to them, especially teenagers, kids, you're depressed, like that would do nothing for them in terms of healing. And so to really help them walk side by side with them to understand themselves, that what they're feeling when they don't want to go out with their friends is depression, that what they're feeling when they go in their room and isolate is depression. So I want them to come to that realization on their own, and then there's more motivation for change because it's coming from them.
Right, so you're guiding them. You're not doing the analysis for them, but you're creating the conditions by asking certain questions and creating a safe space for them to be able to uncover these truths on their own.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And that comes after building rapport, of course. They have to feel safe enough to admit that they're isolating in their room. A lot of clients won't admit that until, you know, several sessions in.
Right. Right. As far as the group art therapy and individual art therapy, I know that you said you've done both and it is done in both. Would you say that in a group setting, some of the effectiveness would be stifled given the fact that we're really trying to create a space in which we feel uninhibited, in which we feel unhindered in our ability to be to be vulnerable and to tap into some of the things that might scare us on a regular basis? Would you say that being in a group setting might undo some of that? Or does the group sometimes, with the right group, create such an intense ambiance where it's, you know, the opposite, like you'll find in a psychodrama group, where the energy of the group sort of escalates the effectiveness?
I don't think one is better than the other. I think they're different. The advantage of group art therapy is you've got that connection. It encourages connection. It encourages the collective consciousness that we're all going through difficult times together. And it strengthens relationships. When I'm doing art therapy in a group, I always tell them if there's something sensitive, you don't have to share it. You don't have to tell us what this means. You can add a symbol that means something only to you. But the magic of group art therapy comes when clients start giving feedback to each other and supportive comments to each other about their drawings. And that doesn't mean, oh, that's beautiful. Art therapy is not about making pretty pictures. It's about saying, oh, wow, I noticed that bird that you put in your drawing almost looks like it's flying away from the trauma. Or whatever the other clients notice. And it's amazing the amount of insight they're able to give each other.
Wow. That's heartwarming, and it makes a lot of sense as well. So what would you like to see for the art therapy and the modality as a whole in the next few years? What would you like to see as the future of art therapy?
I would like it to continue to get the recognition it deserves. I would love to see it covered by insurance. They're working on that in some states.
When you say covered by insurance, so you're referring to in as far as an art therapist's private practice, being able to accept a client and engage in art therapy and have insurance cover that, right?
Right. So I'm in my private practice, I take insurance because I'm also a therapist. There are art therapists who are not licensed counselors or licensed therapists, and they have a difficult time because they can only accept private pay.
Sure. So, but the interesting thing is that you are a licensed therapist and you're able to charge insurance in the sense that insurance recognizes the work that you do, even though you're doing art therapy. So they're saying that's an acceptable modality as long as you're a licensed therapist.
Yes. And to be fair, we don't always use art therapy. It depends what's going on for the client.
Right. Of course. Of course. But it makes sense that they're not necessarily currently challenging the modality as a whole. They're just saying that this is not any type of an independent therapy where, you know, even in the absence of a traditional licensed clinical degree, this would be an independent therapeutic position authority. Yeah.
Yeah. I would love to see increased recognition and respect for art therapy as its own unique modality.
Amazing. And last but not least, would you suggest any resources for folks out there listening who might want to learn more about art therapy?
Yeah, I would recommend going on the American Association of Art Therapy's website. It's full of information about art therapy and how to find an art therapist if you're looking for an art therapist. You can also Google art therapists near me and see what comes up. And as I mentioned earlier, you can check and see if they have the letters ATR and or BC behind their names, and that means they're credentialed. There are art therapy groups. There are some art therapy Facebook groups. And so it's really just kind of Googling in your area.
Sure, sure. This has been amazing. Thank you so much, Sarah, for joining us on the Discover You podcast. We really appreciate you taking the time to share your expertise and wisdom with us. How can people find out more about you and the wonderful work that you do?
Oh, thank you. It was a pleasure to be here, JD. I have a website. It's sarahgalliplmft.com. And I have a profile on Psychology Today. And I have a Facebook page, Creative Space Art Therapy, and an Instagram account, Creative Space Art Therapy.
Awesome. And thank you, audience, for joining us too. I hope you enjoy today's episode of Discover You. At Montier, we want you to know that you're never alone on your journey. And to find out more about our innovative treatment programs, you can find us at montierbh.com. And you can listen to our Discover You podcast on iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Wishing all of you vibrant health and a safe and peaceful day. See you next time.